From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's at Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Nathan Klucheski will join us from U of I Extension. He's a plant pathologist and has been studying and following the outbreak of tar spot in the northern part of Illinois and across a good portion of the Corn Belt. He'll have more on that. And as we close out our time together, I'll take you through the weather forecast for a good portion of the United States and what it'll look like over the next week or so. And it all happens on this March 20th, a Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson to take a look at the marketplace and what's been happening in Chicago. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd. Always happy to be here.
I want to start not in Chicago today, but in the western United States, Nebraska, Iowa, parts of the Dakotas, Minnesota, even Wisconsin, I think, because right now there's an awful lot of flooding that's happened along the Platte and the Missouri River below Sioux City, Iowa. However, that's going to spread and already is to the Mississippi River Basin in general. What do we know about how the market reacts to flooding at different times of the year?
Well, that's a good question, Todd, and it's something that I have definitely been looking at. I went out, you know, 1993, we had a similar situation where we had just tremendous flooding, and of course, like you said, it moves downriver is what it does. So it gets, it's already in parts of Missouri, you know, and it's going to move further south yet. But when you look back and when you look for a reaction, we can only go by what happened in the December 1994 futures. Interestingly enough, we were already flooding at this time, and we went down another 25 cents until we got to the May USDA report. So if that were the case, and it happened from today, and this would be as of today, we'd be down at 370 on DEES. And then from there, it went up 10% after the USDA report, which would have taken it back to 407. And then by the end of June, we were actually down 21.5%. Would take it down to 323. And so it just goes to show you that because we have a wet and a flooding situation, it doesn't always mean that the futures are going to go wild because of it.
And it's important to note that while we did flood in 1993 in the springtime, which is a good comparison, people probably remember that then again later in the year, there was a big bump, but that was because, we had rainfall after the June report, and it coughed the market off guard, and that's where the flooding really, that happened, and it wasn't until, very late August that the floods were the as large as they could get. So there's lots in that history to understand, but you're right, and really it's really good stuff to point out what it did do that year because of the flooding early in the season.
Right, and I think, you know, this is the reason I wanted to bring it up, Todd, is because so many times people hold off on marketing because they expect that something like this is going to give them, it's going to give it a big bump. It's going to really make it move. It's going to do this. And that just plain doesn't happen. And then you have a situation where, you know, we have all these outside forces going on besides with the tariff situation. That's another thing. You know, if you take and you wind the tariffs into the wet spring, how big a bump are we really going to get if we do settle this thing with China? And is it going to be a long-term bump? I really question whether that's realistic because the news has been here for such a long time already. So much is in this market. Granted, you know, we do have managed money short, 236,000 contracts. You know, they're also short wheat. They're short beans. So, you know, you could see a short covering rally, but how far will it go is the question. And, you know, you just can't, you can't manage your business based on what you hope is going to happen. And so I think that a person needs to think about this stuff and put it into their thinking cap. And when they're making decisions on marketing, at least get a percentage of what you've got done.
You mentioned the outside markets, China, of course, an influence. Part of that, the trade and tariff negotiations that are taking place between the Xi and Trump administrations. However, There's also a great deal of it that has to do with just simply consumption patterns in China, as a large part of their swine herd apparently has been decimated by African swine fever. We've talked about that for a while, but some real numbers are starting to come out now.
We're finally getting it. And you can see it in the futures today, because the swine futures are locked, limit up all, I believe, almost every contract all the way out until October of 19. We're locked up limit just now. And so, you know, I mean, today. And when you look at that, today they came out with a big wire story about the outbreak of swine fever and how everybody had underestimated where it's at. And Arlen Suderman had a good article about it. He said that to replace a 31% reduction, which is what they're now thinking they have there, it would require all of the annual production from Canada, the United States, Mexico, and Brazil. Can you imagine that? Can you even wrap your head around that? They're the global leader in pork consumption, and they just require enormous amounts of beans. And, you know, that's why the United States and Brazil have had such big soybean programs. And now suddenly we see a 31% reduction. So, you know, it isn't just the tariffs that are having an impact. It's like you said, there's a lot of other things going on in the background. But I don't think anybody, including myself, truly has a concept of how big a country China is.
It will influence the markets for some time to come, at least the African swine fever, the lack of demand that will be coming until they can repopulate those herds and bring themselves back up to whatever level they decide is appropriate. And I suppose because it's a demand economy or a command economy, they may very well be doing a lot of thinking about what that means. Other places around the planet we ought to discuss for the day.
I want to add something to what we were just talking about, too, that was very scary to me this weekend when you looked at the fact that they busted a group bringing in meat, illegal pork meat coming into the United States. And I believe you're the one that put it out on Twitter. I don't know if you talked about it at all, but I think that is just terrifying to me when you think of the fact that we right now are clean. We do not have African swine fever. But when you have people who are trying to illegally bring things into the United States, and thank God we've got the border people, or I mean the people who are looking for this, that they stop them. But, you know, if we get it here, it could just be a terrible situation. And so I think in general we have to really support the government people who are watching our back.
Those, by the way, were U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents, by the way, and they made the biggest seizure of agricultural product in American history. That was 1 million pounds of pork that was smuggled in from China, where there, of course, has been that outbreak of African swine fever. More than 100 Customs and Border Protection agricultural specialists and canines from the USDA worked to uncover the prohibited food. The U.S. has never had African swine fever, and officials have been, of course, stepping up efforts to keep that disease out, because the disease is carried in the meat product, though it's not infectious to humans. If a pig were to eat it, certainly would be infectious to it.
Well, pigs are cannibals. I mean, they'll eat anything that gets in front of them, you know, and so you're very right. I mean, it's very scary to think that somebody would put money ahead of everything else, but I guess that's kind of the way the world is built right now. Other places in the world, Brazil, of course, ABIOV just raised their projections for the soy carryout stocks down in Brazil for 2018 by more than 2 million metric tons on yesterday, which is big, because everybody figured they were going to be down because of all the beans that China took, but they understated last year's crop is what they did. And so that isn't a great picture for us. And they didn't make any changes, you know, in their exports. They still expect them to be very aggressive with exports. But it just means they have an extra 2 million metric tons to be able to ship out of there that we didn't know they had before.
Finally, support and resistance.
Well, for corn, for May, we've got support at 360, 344, and 333, and resistance at 377, 388, and 404. July 370, 355, and 345, and then resistance at 385, 395 and 410 and a half. Again, I'll remind everybody this is based on weekly retracements. For beans, May, 888, 864, and 849 for support, and 920, 952, 977 resistance. July, 902, 878, 863, that's support. Resistance, 933, 950, and 988.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
That's Jackie Veig. She is with Stuart Peterson. Joins us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Remember, you can listen to our program anytime you'd like on demand. It's gotten even easier as we've just added the Closing Market Report, the Opening Market Report, as well as Commodity Week, all to one of your favorite music apps, especially probably if you're on an Android device, maybe on a PC as well. You can find us on Spotify now. Just search for the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. The Opening Market Report, too. Of course, they're in iTunes, the Google Play Store, and you can find them in Stitcher, SoundCloud, and in one of my favorite apps, the NPR One app. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Nathan Klucheski. He's an extension plant pathologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. Thanks for being with us, Nathan. I'd like you to tell me about a plant disease for corn called tar spot.
Obviously it's wintertime. Nothing much is happening right now with tar spot. But in terms of what we know versus what we knew, I think we have some information that is useful for the producers. We also have some coordinated research that we plan on conducting this season across multiple states. And, we'll have more information at the end of the year once all that's completed.
So producers have or will be still making some decisions about their seed that they're planting. Let's start with geography in the state where this is a problem, and then we'll work on what they can do about it.
Right. Yeah. So, the part of Illinois, at least, that has the most severe tar spot potential would be the northernmost region, probably northeast. The closer you get to Lake Michigan, it seems like the more severity, the higher severity for tar spot. As you move south from that area, the incidence is less and less, and so the risk level, therefore, is reduced. So if we talk about thinking about your risk level and you've got a ladder that you climb, low is low risk and top of the ladder is high risk. Take yourself up a step on that ladder if you're in the northern region of Illinois and you had tar spot last year.
Geographically, is it in the Corn Belt? Is it that part of the world plus Wisconsin, parts of Michigan, Indiana?
Yeah. So it's found, we have it in Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois, obviously, and Florida and Ohio. So that's where it's found right now. But in terms of severity, where we've seen it the most and where pressure is the highest, if you would take that kind of lower portion of Lake Michigan, that lower U portion, kind of draw a section around there, that's where it's the greatest severity right now. That's where we've had the most pressure.
Do we know why?
It's probably something to do with the climate. Humidity being closer to the lake, and also last year we sure had a lot of storms pushing through that direction, dropping lots of rain and pushing more spores out and more disease. So it's a combination of things. This is what we call a cooler season disease. It likes it when it's 60 to 70 at night and humid, and those conditions obviously are met quite frequently in that part of the world.
What can producers do to prevent an infection?
Well, right now the options are pretty limited. There are some things that you can do ahead of time to kind of plan if you're at a significant risk level. We do know that hybrids have differing tolerance to this disease. They're all susceptible, but some are less susceptible than others. And if you can get information from your seed producers in terms of what their rankings are for their hybrids that they're selling and which ones are more susceptible versus less susceptible, go with something that's less susceptible if it fits your production needs. We do have some of that information that has been published. Now, I personally wasn't able to publish hybrid names in my hybrid trials. But in Wisconsin, if you go to Damon Smith's website at BadgerCropDoc, I believe he was able to publish some of the hybrids in his trials. And obviously a lot of those were in ours as well. And so he has ratings for how they performed in his trial in terms of tar spot. So that could be a way for you to select something that's less susceptible than something else.
I suppose we had to step back once. How much of a problem can it be? How much yield does it rob?
So this year in fields where tar spot was the only real issue, we were looking at anywhere between 10, 40, 10, and 50 bushels. And again, you have to keep in mind that was kind of a perfect storm. It came in early and established itself, and then it really blew up late. And so there was a lot of corn development left when this thing was taking off. Typically, this disease, when we have seen it in the past, we don't start to see it till later in the season when yield is pretty much made. So last year, a little different, got wet early, cool early, and it persisted for a while and kind of blew up on us. And that's why we had the epidemic we had.
Is it a disease you should scout for? And if you do, are there rescue treatments?
Yeah, so scouting is absolutely essential, I think, because as I mentioned, when it gets to the corn is important. And what I've been telling people, especially people that are on the fence about a fungicide application, because I mean, let's be honest, it's not the corn market right now. We have to be careful with our inputs. We got to make sure we're making decisions that are going to try to make the most money for us. So if you're out in your field before VT, you're going, you're scouting early when the plants are at the vegetative stage, and you start to see a little tar spot picking up on those tissues, and it looks like we've got some wet weather maybe in the future, you might consider pulling the trigger on a fungicide application. There are some labeled products. Obviously, the companies have data indicating that they have some efficacy. That doesn't mean that other products don't have efficacy, but in general, if you want to apply a fungicide, you most likely want to be focusing on those that have a label or 2EE supplemental label for tar spot on them.
Are they very effective?
They can be very effective if they're applied at the right time. So this is a disease you want to spray for before significant disease has taken place. And that's why I say scout early. If you want to make an application and you see it early and you come in at VT, that's going to be protecting your ear leaf and those leaves above that are going to be contributing the majority of your photosynthate to the ear as it develops.
Let me ask a different question, because there will be those that are pushed to apply a fungicide for a yield bump. Mm-hmm. I know that's about 1 in 3 year prospect or something sure. like that. However, is there a difference between when that application would be done generally and when you're talking about an application being done?
Not really. I mean, in general, when we're talking about applying a fungicide to corn, we're coming in at that tassel to R1 stage. There's been some recent meta-analysis done, recently published, indicating that in general, that's the most profitable application timing across all sorts of diseases and environments. And so that's when the plants are most under the most stress in terms of drought, disease, and that's why the fungicides tend to go on at that time.
Do you have any final thoughts on this corn disease called tar spot?
Just one of the things I've been telling people, this is likely to be a disease that's very similar to white mold and Fusarium head blight. And in that, you're going to have a year where it's bad like last year, and then maybe you don't see it for 2-3 years, and then another bad year, because it's very, very much driven by rain and environment. And when that rain comes in, is going to really drive the disease. So keep an eye out for it. Put it on your list of things to manage and be prepared, but don't make any drastic changes to your current management practices.
Hey, thanks, Nathan. Nathan Klucheski is an extension plant pathologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Take a listen to us anytime you'd like on demand. And now you can find us, of course, on many of your favorite podcast applications, including iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, the NPR One app, and brand new, just put into place yesterday. You can listen to our programming on Spotify. That's right. You can use your favorite music app. to pick up and listen to the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Opening Market Report. Usually at this time, we take a look at the weather forecast on a Wednesday afternoon with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He's not available today. However, we do have some of the forecast for around the planet. We'll start with the western United States, working our way to the east in Lincoln, Nebraska today. They went to 68 degrees, then they'll stay there for a good portion of the week. Tomorrow, 58, 55, 49 on Saturday. We will have a little rainfall there, and their lows will be in the 30s. In Des Moines, Iowa, that same sort of numbers for the week, 56 today, although they're really 43 degrees and rising at this point. 56 tomorrow, 51 Friday, 56 and partly cloudy on Saturday. Rain for them on Sunday. Their lows through that time period in the mid-30s. Lincoln, or rather in Springfield, Illinois, 53 degrees today. It's kind of wet, kind of like here in Urbana-Champaign, and they'll stay in the mid-50s for the whole week, all the way through Wednesday of next week. A bit warmer, though, 41 for the low, then 37, 33, 29, 43, 43 by the time we get to Sunday and Monday of next week for the low, so things heating up just a bit. That should be good for the beginning of spring in Minnesota. Let's go up to the northern part of the area. Minneapolis for the Corn Belt, 43 today, partly cloudy. Tomorrow, 44, partly cloudy. Friday, 45, partly cloudy. Their high comes on Saturday at 54, but Sunday they'll drop back down to 44, and they get a chance of a snow shower or two, though probably not the case. They have a mid-30s low for a good portion of the week. They will drop off by the time they get to Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday for the lows, down to 28 and 26 on Tuesday night. Indianapolis, a high today of 48 degrees, partly cloudy skies, well, some rain. Tomorrow, bit of sunshine, 46. Friday, 47 and 51 on Saturday. Beautiful day. No clouds there in Indianapolis. They'll drop, though, under that cloudless sky down to 26 on Saturday night in Indianapolis. And one other place in the United States, Manhattan, Kansas. Nice, 62 degrees today, 59 tomorrow, 63 Friday, 55 on Saturday. Let's turn our attention southward to some of the growing regions in other places. Mato Grosso, Brazil, the largest soybean producing state, 92 today, 87, 86, and 85. They do have some rainfall that'll be coming for them. That over today, tomorrow, and Friday. That's a look at the weather forecast. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.